Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to Elbit Vision Systems' fourth quarter 2016 results conference call. All participants are present in listen-only mode. Following management's formal presentation, instructions will be given for the question-and-answer session. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. You should have all received by now the company's press release. If you have not received it, please contact EVS's Investor Relations team at GK Investor Relations at 1-646-688-3559 or view it in the news section of the company's website, www.evs.co.il. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. Gabriel Forewein. Please go ahead.
Mr.
Forewein, you may begin.
Yes.
Thank you, operator, and my apologies for that interruption. Welcome to EVS's fourth quarter and full year 2016 conference call. I would like to welcome all of you to the conference call. I would like to thank EVS's management for hosting this call. Before we start, I'd like to point out that this conference call may contain projections and/or other forward-looking statements regarding future events or the future performance of the company. These statements are only predictions, and EVS cannot guarantee that they will in fact occur. EVS does not assume any obligation to update that information. Actual events or results may differ materially from those projected, including as a result of changing market trends, reduced demand, and the competitive nature of EVS's industry, as well as other risks identified in the documents filed by the company with the Securities and Exchange Commission. With us on the call today are Sam Cohen, CEO, and Yaron Minashev, CFO. Sam will introduce EVS and discuss some of the key highlights of the fourth quarter, while Yaron will summarize some of the financial highlights of the fourth quarter. After this, we will open the call for the question-and-answer session. Now I'd like to hand over the call to Sam Cohen, EVS's CEO. Sam, please go ahead.
Thank you. I'd like to welcome all of you to our conference call, and thank you for your interest in our company. These results validate the success in our plans for continued year-over-year growth in sales and revenue. More importantly, they demonstrate a significant step forward to realize our goal of a complete textile automation and quality standardization. Our overall R&D expenses increased by 80% year-over-year in 2016. However, we want to emphasize that R&D expenses increased specifically in Q4 by about $200,000 due to a one-time retirement grant expense given to two employees. On the bottom line, we reported fourth quarter net income of $449,000, up 35% year-over-year, despite this single R&D expense. Looking ahead, we expect our quarterly operating expenses to return to the average level seen in early quarters in 2016. In terms of revenue, our first quarter 2017 revenue looks in line to slightly ahead of those of the first quarter of last year. Our current backlog is similar to that at the same time last year. However, it is too early to make an accurate estimate for 2017 since we have a number of potential eyeball opportunities in the pipeline, which we are actively working on and which could have a significant positive impact on the year. Throughout this year, eyeball sales continue its positive trend. We have seen year-over-year sales growth exceed 50%, and today we have over 200 units running in production. We currently have multiple customers with over 20 units installed, as well as one customer with nearly 80 units. We are also excited to report that we currently have about 10 trial placements that represent potential sales of over 500 units in a variety of textile products. Obviously, the eyeball sales have not progressed on the timeline we originally expected, but over the past two years, we have acquired a vast amount of knowledge regarding how to better promote the product. For example, we now understand that most commodity weavers tend to calculate their return on investment strictly from labor saving. However, eyeball provides multitude of cost savings like reduced raw material cost, downtime reduction, significant quality improvement, lower inspection cost, and direct from loom shipping. When these factors are brought to light, payback becomes obvious to all. Another strategy we are working on is large-scale leasing. No one can argue that having an IBAR unit can save a minimum of $3,000 to $5,000 per loom per year, even on the lowest price commodity goods. By aligning annual capital expenditure with the bare minimum of saving calculations, even the greatest of critics can see the benefits. This further understanding of the market tendencies, coupled with IQTEC sales that include IBAR trials, has allowed us to capture sales in many customers who were initially reluctant to buy. We know this will be a winning strategy moving forward. As we have discussed many times in the past, EVS is an automation company specializing in machine vision. It is clear to everyone that replacing repetitive human labor is no longer a choice, but a necessity to survival. EVS has positioned itself as the automation leader of the second largest industry in the world with over $7.5 billion in potential machine vision sales. Given that this market is only beginning to adopt automation, EVS is well positioned for long-term, sustainable, substantial revenue growth. Last week, our stock performed a 10-to-1 reverse share split. Under the mechanics of the split, our ticker was temporarily changed to EVSND, but will return to EVSNF next week. The reverse split brings our share to well above $1, which is a price that institutions are more comfortable investing in. And this action, combined with our above $5 million in shareholder equity reported today, meets the conditions required to uplist to the NASDAQ capital market. Though we have no immediate plans to uplist, the step we have taken prepares the groundwork to make this move when we feel the time is right. In summary, we remain very pleased with our performance in 2016 and look forward to continued growth ahead. And with that, I would like to hand over to Yaron Menashe, our CFO. Yaron, go ahead.
Thank you, Sam. Today we announced solid financial results for both the quarter and full year of 2016. Revenue for the third quarter of 2016 were $2.8 million, representing year-over-year growth of 18%. For 2016 as a whole, we reported $10.1 million, a record revenue level, and up 11% year-over-year. Fourth quarter gross profit was $1.5 million, 22% ahead of those of last year, with a gross margin of 54.7%. In 2016, we reported gross profit of $5.6 million, up 7% year-over-year, with gross margin of 55.4%. Operating income in the first quarter of 2016 was $478,000, 23% ahead of the first quarter of last year, with an operating margin of 70.2%. As Sam mentioned, our OPEX was higher in the first quarter of 2016, primarily due to high level of R&D expenses, which amount to $614,000 versus $253,000 last year. We expect our R&D expenses to return to the level of the third quarter last year. For the year, operating income was $2.2 million versus $2.3 million last year, with operating margin of 21.3%. Net income for the first quarter of 2016 was $459,000, an increase of 25% over last year and representing a net margin of 16.1%. For the full year, we reported a net income of $2 million versus $2.5 million reported last year, with a net margin of 19.9%. Our diluted earnings per share for the year was 2.2 cents per share versus 2.5 cents last year. Cash and cash equivalent and short-term deposit as of December last year were $4.5 million compared to $3.3 million as of December 2015. As of year-end, our shareholder equity strongly improved and stood at $5.8 million, up by $2.1 million from $3.7 million reported at the end of last year. And with that, we would be happy to take your question. Operator?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question-answer session. If you have a question, please press star 1. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If using speaker equipment, kindly lift the handset before pressing the numbers. Your questions will be pulled in order they are received. Please stand by while we pull for your questions. The first question is from Brian Kisslinger of Maxim Group. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Sam.
Good morning.
So 11% growth is solid in 16, but like you said, progress has been a little bit slower than you would have expected. So based on your pipeline, when do you think growth can accelerate to, say, 25% or more? And what kind of sales and marketing investment do you think is necessary to sustain that kind of growth?
You know, the opportunities are there. As we reported, we have more than 10 trials running right now, and the potential is more than 500 units. But it's very difficult to pinpoint exactly the timing when it's going to happen. Obviously, if it's going to happen, it represents a very large growth. But in any case, even if it will happen, I believe that these customers will say, okay, we would like to order 150 units, but we would like to consume it in 12 months or in 18 months or something like that. So, you know, it's very difficult to predict exactly when it will be 25 or 30% growth. But we feel very strong that obviously it will happen. It's clear that we didn't even started to scratch the potential here. Exactly when it's going to happen is hard to say.
So I was going to say, at what point does the company step up sales and marketing to get, you know, double the number of trials or triple the number of trials so, you know, you have more shots on goal to say, you know.
Right now, what we decided as a kind of a tactic, I don't want to say strategy, but as a tactic, every time when we sell IQTech 4, our legacy business, IQTech 4 or SVA, we also offer, as almost as an automatic, we're offering an IVAR together with it. Obviously, the customers, most of them like it, like the idea. We like it because it's, let's say, multiply our technical force. Because if I already have an engineer that is going to work for 1 month installing IQTech 4, at the same time or in parallel, he can install IVAR and present and prove to the customer that the potential of the IVAR. We started to do it in the U.S. and it worked very nice, and now we are doing it in Europe and in Asia. So this is part of how we kind of almost increasing the number of engineers that we have. And we also trained all of our engineers globally. We trained them to know how to install and how to operate the IVAR.
Great. And with that said, I mean, the company is already profitable. And so I think you meet the requirements. So what is it that management wants to accomplish before uplisting? Like you mentioned, that the company is not ready for that.
We didn't say the company is not ready. We said that it's not the right timing. It's important for us to feel not to feel, but that everything will be in place. We are now, hiring more people in the management level that will help us in operation, in marketing, in R&D. And when everything is going to be in place, production is going to be, everything will be in place, all of our people and territories will work flawless. And we will feel that the customers adapting these products without real issues with the software, hardware, or anything that can happen, then we are going to do it.
Okay. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
The next question is from Michael Bursick of National Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you. You mentioned that you expect the first quarter to be flat to slightly up from last year on the revenue side. Do you see the same on the margin and profitability side, or do you think there's some room for improvement there?
I feel it's the same, probably better.
Okay. On the just on the marketing side of the stock itself, you guys have any plans yet on getting the word out through various methods, conferences, anything like that?
Can you explain? I don't understand your question.
More IR. Getting more shareholders okay. to know about your company.
Yes, of course. We are planning to have more seminars, and we are going to work with our IR and prepare more roadshows during 2017.
Okay, great.
Finally, definitely going to be part of. I believe that once we will make a decision to uplist, we're going to have to do a lot of work here. I mean, in the U.S., Europe, and in Asia, by the way.
Right. Yeah. Finally, you mentioned a possible large-scale leasing model.
Yes.
How would that impact margins and revenue recognition, et cetera? Is it going to look more like a subscription-type model?
I don't feel it's going to have a huge impact. On the other hand, it will give us kind of automatic upgrade every 3 years. We have one customer right now that we are talking about two options, either 3 years leasing or 5 years leasing. So, if he's going to choose the 3 years leasing, then, after 3 years, we are going to automatically upgrade to the new one. To the new IBARs, which we are working on, as you can imagine, we are working on new generations, all of our products. So, I like this because it gives the customers more. They are more open for this expenditure. They are more. They can accept it. Some places it's taxable, and other financial. How should I say tricks. But this is really a good tool to push a large number of systems. And for us, we feel like this is a cash flow, positive cash flow for us. It's a fantastic tool.
Great. Thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you.
The next question is from Travis Weidauer of Weidauer Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for taking a couple questions. Do you have any sort of timeline on when that leasing program could be rolled out? It sounds like it's started, but maybe just on a global scale when it'll start rolling out?
We started in the U.S. with two companies. One of them is a pure North American operation. And one of them is they have plants in North America and in Asia, in Thailand. And both of them really like it. Both of them really, we are continuing the negotiation process with them. We are excited about it. They are excited about it. I feel like this is a good strategy. We should start in the U.S. or with North American companies. Because also in North America, it's more more common to do things like this. I can tell you that every time I discuss it with the companies from India, they were not open for that. I just came from South Korea, and they were open. One of them said, "Okay, I'm willing to listen to such a structure," and another company said, "No, we will buy everything we want." So. I think we are, instead of going globally one time, we're going to do it step by step just to make sure it's working, it's running, because we also need to make sure that our system is capable to handle such a situation. For example, if a customer decides not to pay for 1 month, you know, we need to be in control, and we got to make sure that the machines will not work in such a case. And that's why we want to do it first in North America, with respectable companies, AAA companies, and we know which our good friends, we know them, they know us, so, you know, everything will work flawless.
Thank you. That's helpful. And then in the past couple quarters, you've cited a number of engineers as, or not having enough engineers as kind of a bottleneck.
Mm-hmm.
Some IBAR sales. Is that still a bottleneck, or is that kind of subsided, or where's that at?
Let's put it this way. It's not a bottleneck yet, but it's still a painful subject. We are continue to improve this all the time, and hiring more and more engineers, field engineers, train them, especially in Asia. As a matter of fact, I was in Asia in the last two, three weeks, and I was very pleased with the progress of our engineers over there. It looks like they made a huge progress, especially in China. So, you know, it's something that will be probably forever here, and it's good. It's a good problem because it means that we grow and we need to fulfill the demand.
Okay, thank you. That's all for me.
Thank you, Chris.
The next question is from Kevin Didi of Rodman. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for taking the question.
Hi, Kevin.
Could you just talk a little about the addressable market? I'm curious to see whether or not you think your potential customers are becoming more in tune with using machinery and vision systems to help improve their yields. So could you talk a little bit about how you see that end market changing during 2000, you know, from the end of 2015 through 2016?
Sure. You know, almost like any industry, it's all about return on investment. Of course, there are many hidden benefits to our products, but at the end of the day, people will always measure return on investment. And we're working very hard on these two things. We're working very hard to increase our value, and we're working very hard to reduce the cost. And we are doing it. In fact, we are very, very pleased with the progress we are making. Today, the IBAR, we can sell IBAR probably half of what we used to sell a year ago and still make the same profit, the same ratios. So we feel like it's all a question of performance and the price. Once and both of them, we're working with both of them. So if the price will be in the range of 7,000, 6,500, 8,000, these kind of numbers, if I'm talking about the IBAR, then I don't feel, I feel like, let's say, at least 70, 80% of the addressable market, which is 1 million weaving machines, will adapt this kind of technology. As I said in the script, in the conference, that we feel like that justifying $3,000 per year, it's no-brainer. It's very difficult for me, and you can, I would be happy to discuss it with any weaver that can show me that he cannot justify $3,000 per machine. And this is 1 year, so, you know, if you take 6,000 or 7,000, you have less than 3 years, about two years payback on these machines. And of course, if we had more value, which means more statistical tools, all kind of management and operation, and obviously all the detection that we have on these machines that improve the first quality, reduce the off quality, then this is where the payback is. This is where the payback is coming from, and this is where we feel strong that weavers or textile companies will adapt our product. Moreover, we feel very strong about OEM's agreement. There's about 50,000 weaving machines, new weaving machines being sold every year. These companies, all the weaving machineries manufacturers, companies are looking at EVS. They are investigating EVS. We see them on every exhibition. I must say that we are not pushing them at this point. We want to be more mature as a company. We want to have the product much more mature than it is right now. We want it to be more closer to plug and play. We want our customers to push their suppliers to have EVS. So when a company want to buy, let's say they bought 50 new weaving machines, they want to ask the weaving machine supplier, why don't you contact EVS and see if I can have these machines already integrated with the iBoss system. So we want to be in that situation. This is our strategy. This is how we are. This is why we feel so strong about the market. And regarding addressable market, as I mentioned, there's about 1 million weaving machines, and even if you take $7,000 or $8,000, you can see per machine. You can see that it's about $6.5 billion. Regarding our legacy business, addressable market is, let's say, between $1 billion to $2 billion, depending if you take in consideration the non-woven industry. So if you take the pure textile, it's about 10,000 finishing lines. If you sell IQTEX for about $100,000 together with the SVA, then it's about $1 billion. And as I said, if you add the non-woven production line, the film production lines, all kind of plastics and coated material that has nothing to do with textile, all kind of surface, then you see that the potential is even higher.
Okay, thanks, Sam.
You're welcome.
Can you talk a little bit about the sales cycle and the backlog and how that's changed over the past year? I mean, I know you mentioned, and I apologize, I didn't catch the number, but I know you talked about the number of machines that you have in backlog and about it being about the same level as last year. But given that your pricing's come down and the ROI picture that you're offering your customers has improved, can you talk a little bit about how the sales cycle has changed through 2016 and how you hope it changes in 2017?
How the sales cycle of IBAR, you mean? The online inspection?
Yes, please. Yeah, I'm curious to see if you think that customers are going to make a decision faster.
Customers are going to make a decision faster because our systems are better and our engineers who work on the systems are better and they have much better understanding. And they are not going to have, they're not going to have to tweakle the system for 3 or 4 weeks like we used to have in the past. And we adding more and more features, new capabilities that are more, you're going to find more companies that, that's good enough for them. When we started, even though we had a business plan and we defined the products from a marketing point of view, all this is good and fine, but until you put 100 machines in production, you're going to miss many things, and we already passed this stage. So today the system, I'm not saying it's perfect, the opposite. We have a lot of things to do, but it is much better than it was a year ago, a year and a half ago, and have much more capabilities. So once the machine, let's say, if the machine is completely automatic, it's going to take 1 day for the customer to say, okay, I'm happy, let's talk about more systems. Today, it should take 2 weeks, 1 month, maximum 2 months, to get to the point where the customer is ready to talk about more systems and budgetary questions and, quotations and negotiations, etc.
Okay, and then how do you think that's changed from last year? And then how do you think that's changed the backlog?
It didn't change much the backlog, but it changed a lot the potential. We feel very, with the potential right now, the real potential that we have in the pipeline is more than 500 machines. So once we are going to do everything, if if the customers will realize what we have done, we have a potential to get very large, let's say hundreds of orders. In fact, we have today something that we didn't have a year ago. We are talking to at least three customers on more than 100 machines on each one of them. Actually, one of them is, we are talking to him about more than 200 machines. So, you know, it's changed a lot from a year before. A year before, we talked about, okay, when we put one machine or two machines, and the customer says, okay, scratch his head and say, okay, let's buy 10 more, let's buy 14, and then we'll see, you know. So now we are very quickly getting to the point where customers are talking about much more than additional five machines. So it didn't change the backlog, but it changed dramatically the potential.
Understood. Okay, yeah, thank you for that color, Sam. My last question is, can you talk about the number of customers that you had in 2015 versus the number of customers you have now or at the end of 2016?
You know, Kevin, it's almost the same as far as IBAR and as far as potential. If you're talking about if you are talking about number of trials or number of customers that trying this machine, whether they bought it or not, it doesn't really matter because it's not significant. But obviously, we have much more customers for IBAR. So today, I think we have about 20 customers that are using IBAR successfully. Right now, we are working with in parallel globally with 10 new customers. And we have 20 customers that are already using the IBAR for a long time.
Okay. Perfect, Sam. Thank you so much for indulging me and the additional color. I appreciate it greatly.
You're welcome, Jeff. Thank you.
The next question is from Mike Schellinger of MicroCap Club. Please go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering if you could tell me about what improvements you might have underway for the IBAR and to the extent you can talk about it, maybe talk about how that might impact the end market.
Hi, Mike. It's simple. You know, once you have a multiple number of IBARs, it's okay. It's one thing to stop the machine, the weaving machine, when something is wrong, when the process is wrong, when there is something that you understand that you have to stop the machine for that, and this way you save a lot of off quality. But then you have all this information, all this flow, hundreds of thousands of information that goes into one computer, the central computer. You want to give tool to the weavers management to say, okay, I've got a problem with this yarn suppliers, because I see that all the yarns that he provide me has more defect by 10% or 20% than the other yarn supplier. There's a lot of tools, statistical tools, that we can give to the management that increase the value and improve the product that we eventually giving them. I believe that working in this area, which all the database, ERP systems link to their, even customers today, let's say they receive an order to supply 100,000 meters of fabric, okay, obviously good fabric. So they wanted to measure the length of all the off quality from all the weaving machines, because they say, okay, if I will add in the next month all the size in Y direction, all the defects length, and I will get to, let's say, instead of 100,000, I will get to 99,000. Then it means I need to weave 1,000 more in order to supply the $100,000 order that I received from my customer. So this kind of tools, we didn't have it initially. And we're adding this now, and we give this to the customer. We put it in our presentation, in our speeches, and they like it. They see the value. It's clear to them, because today they have no control. Today, if they have an order of 100,000, statistically they know from their experience that they need to add 5% more. So they will produce 100,000 and 5% more. Because they know they have off quality here and there, so you know they, it's a waste. Today we can tell them accurate to the point exactly how much they need to produce more. And that's going to save them a lot of money. This is just an example.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
The next question is a follow-up from Michael Bursick. Please go ahead.
It's just an obvious housekeeping thing. You talked about earnings per share last year. Obviously, you were talking about pre-split, right?
Yes, we
said it was 0.2. So just that's all, just to make it clear. Thank you.
Okay. Michael?
Yeah.
Did you ask a question?
Yeah, just on the earnings per share, just that it was pre-split.
Earnings per share before the split?
Yeah, he said it was, the earnings per share were like 2.2 cents a share or something like that, and it's 20 cents, split adjusted, that's all.
Interesting.
2.2 cents after the reverse split we made. We reflected the reverse split in our report of 2016. The number were adjusted to this.
Okay, so, but for the year, adjusted, it would be 20 cents a year, right?
No, it's 2.2%.
2.2?
Okay.
2.17.
Yeah, no problem.
No, sorry. No, it's.
I mean, on the screen, I'm looking at the last 12 months' earnings, and it's 20 cents. That's what it shows.
Yes, for the year, it's 22 cents.
Yeah,
it's
correct. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. No worries. Thank you.
No, you're welcome.
The next question is from Ian Castle of Maker Cap Club. Please go ahead.
Yeah, my question is about innovation. I know innovation is important to you, Sam, and the company. I was wondering if there are any other areas within the textile market for products that you are working on that you think can be significant to the company over the long term.
Hi, Ian. Thank you. Obviously, innovation is critical for us. We are working on five new products in parallel right now. Some of them with the subcontractors and some of them in-house. But there is one point that I mentioned this in the script. I said standardization. I was talking about standardization. You know, the patents that EVS have is all about standardization. We're basically controlling the standard because there is no standard in weaving today, in weaving quality today. There is no standard. And although we have a patent on this, we didn't implement it in the IWAR. Once this feature will be implemented in the IWAR, in general, companies, end users like JCPenney and Walmart and Costco and Bed Bath & Beyond, and all these companies will be able to order fabric in quality standard. So they can say we want 100,000 meters of standard EVS 125. And this is our goal. And this is something that we are working on right now very hard. And hopefully we will be able to implement it during 2017. This is going to revolutionize all the weaving process because it's going to force. And this is going to force the weavers to use it because we are going to expose all these ideas of standardization to all these end users. And this is going, to my opinion, completely change all the gameplay. So in that, you know, we're working on standardization on IVAR. We're working on new product that called Printex, which is pattern recognition system. that should give a fantastic answer to all the printing industry, the digital printing industry. We right now working on a definition of a software development kit, which will allow us to literally compete with companies like Cognex and IsoVision. Basically will allow other integrators, other value-added resellers to use our hardware. We are developing hardware since 92, and we have a very nice hardware, fantastic. I don't want to say the best in the world, but I definitely believe it's the best in the world. We just need to have access to other engineers all over the world to the hardware and activate the hardware, which means better software. So there's a huge, let's say, potential using the same technology, the same algorithm that we have today. We just need to be more open, open company, open software, open source, to let other people use this hardware.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
If there are any additional questions, please press star 1. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. Please stand by for more questions. There are no further questions at this time. There's another question from Andy Carruthers from Bagley Securities. Please go ahead.
What do you see as your normal R&D forward with big increase that occurred in the fourth quarter? And the other question is, why would your sales and marketing in the fourth quarter have gone down when you have 8% increase in revenues?
Okay. Could you repeat the first question, please?
Yeah. It's, since you had such a big increase in R&D in the fourth quarter, what do you see as a normal R&D going forward? Is it going to be $600,000 per quarter, or is it going to be closer to the $300,000?
Well, it's going to be similar to the third quarter of 2016. Okay? This is as far as the R&D. As far as the sales and marketing, we see a reduction, I believe, mainly because of commission. Commission structure, the commission structure in the fourth quarter was much lower than our regular structure. Which means many deals were not with agents or distributors, were direct sales. As you know, I don't know if you know, Andy, but we have two ways of selling. If you in the U.S. and in China and India, we sell directly. Sell directly to our customers. We have our own salespeople. In all other countries, we sell through agents. And so when agent sales are going down, we pay less commission. So this is what happened in the fourth quarter.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
There are no further questions at this time. Before I ask Mr. Cohen to go ahead with the closing statement, I would like to remind participants the replay of this call will be available tomorrow on Other Vision Systems website, www.evs.co.l. I see there's another question, a follow-up from Kevin Deedy. Please go ahead.
Sorry, I got it in the last minute. Hi, Sam. Thanks again for staying on the line. I appreciate it. Listen, I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit to the competitive environment. How have you seen that change? Or Do you feel you still have a pretty good shot at addressing this industry without too much competition?
Well, obviously, competition didn't change much at this point. We have a company in England, Shelton, and we have IsraVision and Cognex that's working on other industries, that most of it in non-woven and film industry, but not really in textile. But I am pretty sure, Kevin, that there will be a competition. Companies, I know it for a fact, companies always watch EVS, they watch what we're doing, and they want to see that we are going to succeed. So I feel like once EBS revenue will be, let's say, $30, $40 million, there's no doubt in my mind that we will have very strong competition. And we are working very hard to be and position ourselves to be in very good position when this is when this competition will come. So this is one of the reasons we really work hard to improve our product, get as much market share as possible. I think this is the key. The more customers we'll have, the more systems we'll have, it will be a strong barrier to our competition.
Okay, Sam. Thanks for that color. Appreciate it.
Sure, Kevin. No problem.
There are no further questions at this time. Mr. Cohen, would you like to make your concluding statement?
Yes, thank you. On behalf of the management of EBS, I would like to thank you all and for joining us today and wish you a great day. Have a good day.
Thank you. This concludes the Elbit Business Systems fourth quarter 2016 results conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may go ahead and disconnect.